Okay, we are almost at Purim. It is the 73rd installment of Da'as Tefillah. Can you see the sheet in front of you? The book? Okay,
Can
wonderful.
you see the screen in front of you?
Wonderful. I can, make it out. I can make it out. It's okay. It's all gonna be good. Wow. Yeah, first of all, I just want to remind everyone, as I did in my tefillah thought this morning, that or yesterday, I don't think I made one this morning, that Purim is a particularly auspicious time to daven. And the Satan has arranged that we should never be davening really on Purim. But we should try especially hard to daven on Purim, because there is a halacha that when a person comes over to you, you don't ask them for their credentials on Purim before you give them tzedakah. Kol haposheit yad, the halacha is that anyone that sticks out their hand to us, we're supposed to give them money on Purim, no questions asked. And that is a particularly good day to ask things from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because no further questions are asked. It's just that usually on Purim, we barely daven. We just yada, yada, yada. Oh, there's the Megillah. But besides the Megillah, we should really focus on our Shemoneh Esrei, specifically on Purim. And we should ask extensively for things that we need in our lives. We should add things into the Shemoneh Esrei, make it a very, very special day of tefillah. Okay, wow, we're doing some really deep stuff here in the Sefer Da'as Tefillah, and it will admittedly take a couple of weeks to really get our arms around this and get back to where we were. But let's try to understand what he's been saying. The Maharal, the Ramban, had told us that the idea of a korban is connected to esh, to fire. And fire is that which destroys everything in front of it, certainly destroys things that are of a lesser quality. It takes out things that are of a lesser quality. And that the avoda is associated, he said specifically, with Midas Hayira, or Midas HaPachad, or Midas Hadin, which means that Midas Hadin, in its truest form, if we really wanted God to run the world in a perfectly just way, then much of the world would have to disappear immediately. Much of the world would have to disappear immediately, because first of all, most of the world wouldn't be deserving of continuing to function. But more than that, in a fundamental way, the Midas Hayira means that everything has to be not just just, but true. And in a true sense, nothing really should exist in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The mere fact that we're able to exist is a concession by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu being Mitzamtzem himself in some way. And we pointed out that this all has its root with the Akedah. The Akedah was the prototypical sacrifice, was the prototypical person of Din, Yitzchak. We learned that Yitzchak is the one who related to Hashem more than anyone else with Din. And it was the prototypical act or lack of act in the face of Din. Because what he pointed out is that this is this paragraph here, Mahut Inyan Ha'asiyah Be'olama Shel Hayira. Olama Shel Hayira, if we're focusing on fear of God, if we're getting anywhere, if we're even going to think about what it really means to be standing in the presence of God, our actions must be inactions. Inactions. Because the entire idea of standing before God is to be mevatel oneself, is to pull oneself back, is to give in to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will, is to almost cease to exist in his presence. And therefore, Yitzchak, who was the primary person at the Akedah, he didn't do anything, that's what made him the primary person at the Akedah. Within the world of serving Hashem, out of fear, it's less about what we do and more about what we don't do. It's less about our physical actions. It's more about our machshava, our thought. because our thought is something that isn't physical. It doesn't need to disappear as soon as it's in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? So that's what he said. In Nisbonin b'masav u'pu'ulosav shel Yitzchak b'nisayon ha'akeda nimtza shehu asa lo asa shum ma'aseh. Yitzchak does nothing. But that's what it means to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this way. There is a service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu where I don't do anything. I don't exert what makes me human, right? Acting in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, focusing on my body in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is almost sort of a chutzpah. My body should disappear. I should go up in smoke when I'm in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? So there's a certain type of action that I do by inaction. When I serve God with love, I serve Him with my body. Because when I serve God with love, I'm comfortable with Him. I'm able to coexist with Him. But there's this concept that within the law of Yira and Din, my physical body can't even coexist with Him. And therefore, I serve Him not by doing, but by not doing. Nimtzinu lemeidim at the top. B'marechet hadin, be'olama shel hayira, tachlis ha'avoda nimtzeis be'i asiya. When I'm serving God truly out of din, I serve Him by not doing. Not by doing. Piskata pe'ulahi hi kiniyah usavilut. The main thing I'm doing is putting myself down and bearing the weight of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shlemos ha'madrega hi ha'spatlus. Right? The highest level of what it is being mevatel myself. Why is he doing all this? I'll give you a little bit of a sneak peek. Why is he going there? What is he doing with our brains here? Why is he sending us so far afield? Because remember, the question that he's been trying to answer from the very beginning is how could a prayer, which involves no action, replace sacrifice, which appears to us at the surface to be a very, very physical kind of thing? How can shechting, collecting the blood, sprinkling the blood, how can all of that be replaced by a service where I stand still, my legs together, and don't move, barely move? How can the two be? The two are so different. And what he's going to try to explain is that even in sacrifice, it can't be my actions that are ultimately what's important. Because the whole idea of sacrifice is to make my body into nothing. At the sacrifice, I am the animal. I'm not the person doing the sacrifice. That's the equivalent. If I was the person doing the sacrifice, then it would seem so much different than praying. I'm acting, I'm doing, I'm lifting. But maybe I'm supposed to be the animal. When it comes to Akedas Yitzchak, I'm asked to play the part of Yitzchak, not the part of Avraham. I'm not asked to be the one who binds and who lifts and who raises the knife and does all those things. That's very different than prayer. But how different is prayer from lying on one's back and being completely exposed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? If we understand that what it means that tefillah is sacrifice means that I'm the sacrificed, then it's much easier to understand how one thing can stand in the place of the other. And we will get to that. But I just wanted to give you it sometimes, as you know, at the speed it takes us to go through this, it's so deep. We can go for weeks and weeks till we have any idea where we're going. But that's where he's going.
Rabbi Penner, like, now I understand what you're saying. Like, when we were sacrificing animals, like during the, like when we had Korbanot, it was more of like, we were like Avraham.
Exactly.
And now we're like going the opposite and becoming like Yitzchak.
That's so right.
It's the same. It's just a different
That's right. The act of prayer, think of it. When you're praying, you're not allowed to move. Why do we put our feet together? One reason why we put our feet together is to be like an angel that only has one leg. But it only goes back to the question of why do angels only have one leg? Why don't they have knees? The answer is because they're not meant to be very mobile. Mobility is an aspect of freedom. when I stand and I pray, I'm actually not in a very free position, right? When I want to, we all know that when I'm practicing, when I'm working out, when I'm doing this and that, I stand with my legs separated in a way that I have good balance. I stand my ground. When I stand straight with my legs together, I have very little balance. It's like I'm tied. So maybe instead of thinking that I am doing the sacrifice in the Beit HaMikdash, maybe I should imagine that I am the sacrifice in the Beit HaMikdash. So I just wanted to throw that in because I know sometimes it can take us a while to get back to where we're going. I just want to connect it back a little bit. He'll, of course, do all that. And then we saw last week this incredible idea that turned the first Rashi in Chumash on its head. The Rashi, which says at the very beginning that Hashem wanted to create the world with Midat Hadin, but he saw that the world couldn't last, so he threw in Midat HaRachamim. And we always thought, I always thought, that what that meant, that was that if the world existed with Midat Hadin, we would eventually sin, and we would eventually be deserving of punishment, and within Midas Hadin, the punishment has to come right away. So the world wouldn't last past the first day. Sometime on the first day, Adam would sin, and then the world would have to cease to exist. But it's interesting that this idea comes at the beginning of creation, not at the creation of man. This idea comes at the very, very beginning of creation, that God wanted to create the world b'Midas Hadin, but he saw that in Midas Hadin it couldn't last. And Rav Rakovsky explained to us what this means in a much deeper way, that according to real Midas Hadin, nothing should be able to continue to exist other than Hashem. It's not that man would sin and need to be punished on the sixth day, so therefore he needed to put in rachamim. Rachamim is needed so that when a tree is created, it doesn't burn up in a second in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the idea. A world that truly, truly weighs, din is weighing, weighs the reality and existence of Hashem versus the reality and existence of any physical object, the physical object just disappears in front of him. So that's what that first Rashi means. Not that he needed rachamim in order to protect humans who would eventually fail. Of course they would. But he needed to inject rachamim because if he created the world with din, as soon as anything was created, poof, it would go up into smoke in front of him. Okay? And that's where we got to that. Ra'asha ein ha'olam mitkayem, ein ha'briyos kulam yecholos lihios b'chinas efer tzavur al gabi ha'mizbeach. Okay? Then nothing would exist in any way, shape, or form. Nishara midazu midas hadin b'tarasa ba'olam ha'machshava. Where can true din be carried out? Where can true din, where can we possibly rise to this level of din? Remember, we said before that we hope, we need a lot of God's mercy, and we need a lot of God's chesed. But we're hoping that we can earn part of our reward, right? We can be zoche b'din. Our goal is that we shouldn't have to completely rely on God's handouts, that when he judges us and he gives us what we deserve, we're able to be zoche b'din. We're able to accept certain things, to earn certain things b'din. But now we're understanding that din is not just about reward and punishment. Din is about whether things should be able to continue to exist in his presence. No matter how good we are, we'll never be real enough to not deserve to just disappear when he shows up or disappear in the world in front of him.
Rabbi Penner, then what is the idea of tzimtzum here? Tzimtzum is chesed, and therefore...
Right. Tzimtzum is rachamim. Tzimtzum is a certain amount of rachamim. Right, correct. Chesed within the Kabbalah is his idea to create the world. Din was that which curled it back and said, wait a minute, the world can't exist in front of him. And tzimtzum is that combination where there's chesed, and there's a certain amount of din, but not enough din that everything can exist. That's exactly what it is. That's chesed, din, and that's the order.
Yeah.
The idea to create the world, the possibility of creating the world bedin, and then having to be mitzamtzim that and then going back to Rachamim. Yes.
Thank you.
So what he's explaining here is that the physical world can't really exist at all on the level of din. What can exist on the level of din, he writes, machshava, thoughts. Thoughts are not physical things, and therefore thoughts can exist in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the way that physical molecules do not have the ability necessarily to stand fully in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when we're serving God, when we're serving God out of fear, when we're serving God out of fear, it's not shayach to serve him out of fear with our bodies. Because technically, when we're serving him out of fear, when we're relating to him through fear and midas hadin, our bodies shouldn't even exist. We can only relate to Yira with our minds, with our emotions, and with our thoughts. And that's why, essentially, we'll see that all of serving God in fear is what I don't do with my body, and how that stresses out my mind.
Can you repeat that, please?
I said, what when we're serving God out of fear, essentially we won't be using our bodies. We'll be using our minds because our minds are always stressed out when our bodies are not able to be used or our bodies need to be restricted. So we'll see that all of the idea of lo tases, we'll see in a few minutes. Let's get to it in a minute. But we'll see that all of mitzvot lo taaseh is to serve God by undergoing stress in our minds to not use our bodies. All of mitzvot aseh are basically most the vast majority of mitzvot aseh are to do something for God. The vast majority of mitzvot lo taaseh, which is how we serve him with fear, by definition, can't involve our bodies, because if we're really suddenly relating to fear of God, our bodies are as if they cease to exist. Tammy, you want to say something? You don't even know what to say. This is really, really deep stuff.
Thanks for reading my mind. I'm
Well,
just a little confused because
you unmuted. I didn't completely read your mind, but you unmuted and then you just sat there. So I figured I know what you're about to not say because it's very confused. Yeah.
aren't we judged for our thoughts also?
Yes, we are judged for our thoughts us also. There's no doubt about that. But our thought, again, we are definitely judged for our thoughts, positive and negative. But we can't really serve God out of fear by using our bodies. Because if we're really relating to that moment from fear from God also involves a correction where our bodies really should cease to exist. So we're not talking about a level that's easy to get to, but we're
Well,
going to
no, I guess
see how we do a little bit of that. We're going to
I
see.
understand.
We're going
I
to do a
just want to
tiny bit
know.
of that. We serve God mostly with love. We get a little
Yes.
teeny taste of what it means to serve God with fear.
But what I'm asking though is then why aren't we disintegrated when the negative thoughts come into our mind? In other words, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu judged us the way we should have been, the way we should be judged, then we
Right.
shouldn't be here. So then I understood that you said, but where is that judgment, or where does that world exist in our minds? So then why are we still in existence? Did I misunderstand something?
No, it's just hard
Okay.
to understand. We could be judged for things we think about and things that we do, right? But when serving God at a level of strict justice, it's going to be in our minds. That's the way we serve God out of fear. We don't do it with our bodies. We do it with our minds. And that's true of prayer, and that's going to be true as well, we'll see, of sacrifice. And that's exactly what he's trying to show us, that even though sacrifice looks like a physical action, it's not. It's not about killing the animal. It's about imagining that I am the animal and I'm being killed.
Maybe the paradigm of that would be Yahrog Val Yavor, those three. Right, you're not going to do a
Yes,
Rosh Hashanah. You're not going to do Purim.
absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
That's the ultimate.
Absolutely. That's where you hit that limit where you say, I need to cease to exist. I no longer have a right to be around if I'm going to do that. Right. Now he says the following. Shemoshe Rabbeinu Roa es Scharo Shel Rabbi Akiva. Shesorkim es Besoro b'masreko Shel Barzel. V'shoklin osam v'makulin. V'shoel. Zu Torah v'zu Schara. So Moshe Rabbeinu, according to the Gemara in Menachos, goes up and has visions of Rabbi Akiva. So first he sees Rabbi Akiva. He sees Rabbi Akiva that his flesh is being flayed by the Romans. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, what? Such a big tzaddik. How could it be? Ne shetok. Be quiet. Kach Allah b'machshava lefanai. Okay? Again, another Gemara that you may have heard before that we never understood. What this Gemara always meant to me was that Moshe Rabbeinu saw Rabbi Akiva being killed, and Moshe Rabbeinu complained and said, this is ridiculous, how could you do this? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, this is what I'm thinking, right? It's not a very, very satisfactory answer. This is what I'm thinking, right? Kach Allah b'machshava lefanai. This is what comes up in my mind before me. He basically begs the question, right? He didn't explain anything to Moshe. And generally, that's the way this Gemara is understood. In other words, you can't understand God's thoughts. Moshe Rabbeinu, stop complaining. That this is the way I think, and you don't think, kilo machshavotai, machshavotechem. My thoughts are not like yours. That's not, says the Maharal, or says Rav Rakovsky, that's not what the Gemara means. What does it mean, kach ala b'machshava? Machshava, he's saying, is another way of saying din or yira. Din or yira. Kach ala b'machshava lefanai. This is an example of the world as created at the level of machshava, at the level of din, at the level of yira. At the level of Yira, even Rabbi Akiva can't exist in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu understand it? Because, remarkably, the Maharal explains in Tiferes Yisrael that at the moment that Rabbi Akiva was being killed, he was actually on a higher level than Moshe Rabbeinu. At the moment that Rabbi Akiva was killed, he was a rare human being who actually made it to the point of Yitzchak Avinu. And when he was being flayed in his bed, he actually reached the level of Yitzchak Avinu that he basically was not part, his physical body was no longer part of the world. So what Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe is, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're living in this world. You're living in the world that I didn't create. You're living in the world that I had to create, not the world I wanted to create. I wanted to create a world of machshava, of yira, of din. But we had to bring in a little rachamim. Moshe Rabbeinu, that's why you live in this world. Hanhaga im Rabbi Akiva, l'romamus ma'alaso. Because of the greatness of Rabbi Akiva at that moment, haisa zu shel olam ha-machshava, midas hadin b'taharata. He said, don't ask me kashas, Moshe Rabbeinu, from Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is living in a different place than almost anyone else in the world right now. He's not living in the world that I created with that Midas HaRachamim. He's not living in that world. He's living in a world where you not only have to deserve your reward, earn your reward, you can't really exist in front of the fire of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You really need to cease to exist. Din shetovea bitul gamur shel ma'arechet haguf. Rabbi Akiva has reached the stage that his body needs to disappear, needs to be destroyed. He has become so holy at this moment that his body absolutely needs to be destroyed. This is not a punishment. This is a result of him getting to a place that the world can function as it should, that the physical world needs to disappear in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He is a korban. V'kach kishiyotza nishmaso be'echad v'chazra larum shorsha nidon gufo lihiyot kala. And therefore, when he said the word echad, and he truly reached a level where everything was one and everything was a HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his body needed to disappear. He wasn't being punished by the Romans. He wasn't even being punished. He was being rewarded of getting to a level where your body disappears and you're just with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Inyan zeh mekubalonim b'shem ha'ari, ayin sham tzon kedoshim b'makom. And that number three was why I understand this a little teeny bit, because the number three there sends you to the bottom, which sends you to the Maharal in Tiferes Yisrael Samach Gimel. And there the Maharal deals with this very difficult question. If you remember, the Gemara itself is the famous Gemara also where Rabbi Akiva sees, where Moshe Rabbeinu sees Rabbi Akiva making little crowns on the top of the letters. Little crowns on the top of the letters. And Moshe's like, what's going on? And he says, oh, there's Rabbi Akiva. And he's doing stuff, and he can't understand. And it creates a very big theological question, the Maharal said. If Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who got the Torah from Hashem, and nothing has been introduced since Moshe Rabbeinu came, that's what conservative Judaism believes, lahavdil, that the Torah continues to be revealed throughout the generations. We believe that it all came from that moment at Sinai. So says the Maharal, how could it be that Rabbi Akiva understood things that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand? What could that be? What does that mean? So the Maharal explains as follows, that this was Rabbi Akiva at that moment. The Torah is given to be used in this world. And since Moshe Rabbeinu was the ultimate Torah teacher to give the Torah to the Jews in this world, Moshe Rabbeinu needed to remain connected to this world. He needed to remain connected to this world. He needed to have a foot in this world at all times. If he left this world completely, he would no longer be able to be a conduit between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the world. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu was always at a level, even at his highest point, where we still had one foot on the ground, and that foot was needed so that he could take the Torah from up there and bring it down here. But there is a deeper understanding of the Torah that comes from the moment when a person is no longer here at all. And that's not something that we need to understand, and it's not something that the Torah needs to be brought into the world for. But at that moment, Rabbi Akiva basically left the world already. He was an example of someone who was alive and dead at the same time. Who's another person that we said reached that level? Who else reached that level? Not Eliyahu. Yitzchak Avinu. That's what we said. That's what Yitzchak did. Yitzchak was alive and he kept walking around for another 30 years, but he was basically dead. He was basically in a different place already at that point. Right? And that's what Rabbi Akiva made it to. Amnam, then he ends, Gam ba'olam shenivra b'shituf midas harachamim ba'olamenu. Let's bring this down before we finish. Even in this world, which has rachamim, nobody can live at a place where nothing else could exist except HaKadosh Baruch Hu and thoughts. We can't live in such a world, even in our world. Shenisgala bo ma'amar rachmana al yedei haTorah, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah with the name rachamim, right? We speak of the Torah. Uh-oh. What just happened?